What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All righty, hour number 2 of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. And now joining us is former NFL general manager here today on behalf of Sumer Sports, which we talk about a ton, and that is Thomas Dimitroff. Thomas, how you been?
I'm good. A lot of busy stuff going on, but we're doing well.
So I'm actually going to start you off with just a GM kind of reaction question to another sport. And we all saw this Luka Doncic trade where everyone was like, what the bleep just happened? When a trade like that happens, whether you were in the NFL or just observing sports, and you see a deal that goes down and you didn't expect it happening, and then you see what the return is, you go, that's not satisfactory. What are other general managers like?
I have a lot of friends in different businesses, right? Basketball, baseball, I mean, in the European League. And we have a lot of these discussions when some of these things go down, and I ask them point blank, how did this go down? What are their responses? In the end, there's a lot of sleepless nights before they make these deals, and everything is, you know, they're being judged on these big time moves, right? And I that's where my head goes on it. I always try to empathize with them.
Because it was like clear to me that Nico Harris of the Mavs GM, he made this move because they don't think Luka Doncic fits into their culture. And I go, man, all right, I understand you have a culture. And it's one thing if it's a third or fourth player on the roster that doesn't fit into your culture. But when the guy's your standard and he's a generational player, I think we figure out whatever his culture is and you build around that.
I think I would agree that that's where my head would go with it. Because that guy, I mean, have we seen that? And it's amazing to see that. I exactly understand what you're saying. And I agree with you 100%.
And the other part is when you have a player, because, right, this happens in the NFL all the time, where you go, okay, this player's not in the shape we want him to. What are those conversations like, even when it's with the star, to get them into better shape and to make them understand they need to do that?
I think you sit down and you have that very serious conversation with them, with the head coach and the general manager, and you really drill down on, here are our expectations, point blank. You make it as clear as possible. If that player is not buying in or they're not doing what they need to do, it does become complicated, and that's where it becomes really difficult for a GM to make a move like that, because that's going to be hanging over their head for a long time. That guy's going to go somewhere else, of course, and he's going to thrive wherever he is, and it's always going to be haunting. What did the trade end up being?
Parameters were Anthony Davis, who ended up going back to the Mavericks, who's a really good player, but he's 31. He's not 25. They got a first-round pick and some other pieces. Now, In the NFL, trading a first-round pick for someone is big. In the NBA, there's a lot of deals where there's five first-round picks traded for players.
It's a great point. Yeah. It's a great point. But I saw someone else recently talking about someone else. You'll get into it.
Yeah.
And the Browns asking for a trade. I mean, that's possibly two first rounds and a third, or who knows what that's going
to
be.
So you know where I went to? It wasn't where I first went to. Because when Thomas Dimitroff is here with us, when the news came out today that Myles Garrett wanted out, I wasn't surprised whatsoever. That makes sense. And obviously, you could talk about Buffalo. You could talk about Detroit, the Commanders, the Eagles. What about Kansas City? They're in the penthouse. They are a team right now that no one has the answer for them. We'll see what the Eagles do on Sunday. A first-round pick from Kansas City means nothing for Myles Garrett. What happens if you offer up George Karloftis?
Wow, that's a good GM thought.
Yeah.
I like that. No, I mean, I was not thinking Kansas City at all. But when you talk, because I've been really pushing on the Detroit thing because I really thought Max Crosby should have gone there for other reasons too. That didn't obviously happen. I think they could really benefit. You know, just stand on Detroit for a half a second. The idea of where they're going to go, losing their coordinators, losing people. This is going to be an important year for them to build properly. So I thought that was the right spot. But when you start talking about Kansas City, I don't know. Am I missing? I don't know if I'm feeling Brett Veach in that move, though.
Fair.
I'm feeling Zach Gelb in that move, but I don't know if I'm feeling Brett Veach.
Well, here's the thing. And you used to work for the Patriots, and I'm a Patriot fan. For 20 years, right, they were in the penthouse. So they don't need him. They could still win a Super Bowl without him. But you at least got to make that phone call. And maybe they say, okay, we don't want to pay Myles Garrett. We got a young player in George Karloftis that down the road we'd rather allocate those dollars to him. But teams like the Eagles and the Chiefs, good GMs, they call everyone, right?
Good GMs call everyone. They're always inquiring to see if they can do something. And I know Howie Roseman well, and back in the day we used to joke all the time. He'd ask me for a second round. I think I might have mentioned this. Everything we ever dealt with, it could have been the back end of the roster you wanted a second round. Good to him, right? Because that's what he did, and that's why he's the best in what he's doing right now.
Are there some GMs, right, Howie has that reputation, where when they call you go, even if I like their deal, what am I missing here? I would be skeptical to make a move with Howie Roseman.
I think I never was in that spot because he and I were peers through the whole thing. I guarantee some of the young guys are on the edge of their seat when he calls. It's like my first trade ever was trading D'Angelo Hall, believe it or not, to the Raiders when Al Davis called me. And he gets on the phone with me, and I'm thinking, I'm talking to Al Davis. He's going to run roughshod over me. That was the first deal I ever made. We did the deal for him. He calls me back in 2 weeks, and he said, I want my damn pick back. And I thought, oh, my God. And he was joking with me, of course. But that's life. I think the younger guys in the league are intimidated by Howie's mind.
All right, let me get to the whole Jets. I know you also interviewed with Tennessee. What was your thought process, your takeaways from giving us that experience of interviewing for the Jet GM job?
So I went in there thinking that what I had heard, that they were looking for an experienced general manager. So I was really interested. I would not have just taken random GM jobs. I really wouldn't. I mean, this is the first year in 3 years that I've interviewed, right? For those I interviewed for the Jets, of course, and Tennessee. But the Jets job was really interesting to me because there were parallels in my mind to what I was able to do and what Mike Smith and I were able to do coming into Atlanta back in the day in 2008. It was coming off the Michael Vick debacle. Honestly, you could argue that the Falcons were in even a worse spot than the Jets were in, and I just thought that that would be possibly a good fit for that from that standpoint, right? Being able to rebuild and resurrect an organization was something that had a lot of interest to me. It didn't work out. I'm really happy for Darren Mugey. I know Darren. I mean, obviously they didn't go with any experience there, right? Both he and Aaron Glenn are first timers in that role. It can be done. Mike Smith and I did it in Atlanta, but the point is, Darren Mugey is coming in there, and I think he's going to work well with that group. I have a great deal of respect for the president, Jaime Elhai, who was a part of all this. And they decided they're going to go with these two guys that have a lot of passion and knowledge for football, so it's going to be interesting to see.
You talked about if you got the Jet job and the rebuild, and they do have a lot of young pieces on that team, like a Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, Quinnen Williams. Would you have kept Aaron Rodgers, or would you have said, Aaron, we're getting rid of you?
Well, I've said this around here. I mean, I categorically think Aaron is one of the very best quarterbacks to ever play this game. I think Aaron Rodgers, as where it is now and how things are playing out, it would be best for him to move on from the Jets and go somewhere. I still think, watching him closely in that whole preparation process, I'm like, this cat can still make plays. I know a lot of people want to throw darts at him for other reasons. Mm-hmm. He's making off-camber throws. He's moving around, doing things. And I'm like, this guy can still help a team win. there are, you know, we know there's a there are a dearth of quarterbacks. You're not just pulling them out of the trees, right? I mean, this guy can still play. So I just think goes to a new place, another two years, and helps a young guy come along there. I know he had mentioned that he might want to do that, you know, but the problem is right now, this group of quarterbacks, though they're talented, aren't the same talent as last year's group, right? So there's going to be some growing pains there. I think Shedeur Sanders has a lot of talent, as does Ward. My question to you and anyone else is, who in the heck is the third quarterback in line for that group?
I have gone through this 3,000 times, and also, like, Carson Beck is back at Miami. Now he's transferred to Miami, and I would not use a first-round pick on him. The big story out of the Senior Bowl is Jackson Dart. It could be. I would not use a first-round pick on him. Dylan Gabriel, I would not use a first-round pick on him. Jalen Milroe, I wouldn't use a first-round pick on him. So what I'm saying is there should only be two quarterbacks to go in the first
round.
And
let's see, those two quarterbacks go, let's just say they go in the top five, and then there's that, you know, that wave until the second round.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. Some of those guys, though, they have talent. I mean, you can argue whatever you want about Dylan Gabriel. I mean, small, 5'10 and a half, I think he was. Russell Wilson-ish, right?
Yeah.
Very close. That guy was, he is precise. He's a competitor.
Multiple spots,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, there's some, I it's going to be interesting to see that. I don't envy the Titans to be in the number one spot trying to figure out what they're doing. And I say the Titans because they could easily move back and say, we're going to build that right side of our offensive line, which, you know, we again, spending some time looking at them, of course, in my interview process, too. You know, where is Levis? Can he take another year and really hopefully develop that line to see what he is? Can he continue to learn and grow? Because what he, you know, he can throw the ball deep. There's just a feeling in the pocket that is vital there. They're going to have to make a decision. Do they trade back and get a lot of trade booty, draft booty, or do they try to pick someone in that top five?
So Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, the two quarterbacks are in play. Trading back is in play. If you got that Tennessee job, what would you have done with the first pick?
Well, I think that's what I would have looked at. I would have scrutinized and analyzed those quarterbacks up and down like I would do all the time. But I would, in my back of my mind, and my background is not trading back a whole bunch, right? My background is Trader Thomas moving forward. That said, this is the one time I was just kind of salivating at the thought of, hey, being in that spot to be able to move back and create this, you know, this great gathering of talent. And take Will Levis one more year and really see where he is. Help him grow. I don't know. What do you do in free agency? It's not easy to go in free agency and to get a quarterback. I've never been a big fan of that, to be honest with you. That's a lot of money invested, usually in an older guy. And I know things worked out well for some of those quarterbacks this year, right? It was great to see.
Yeah.
What are those guys going to get this year? Who's in the market this year? Both I'm trying to think who's in the free agency market beyond...
For quarterbacks?
Yeah, for quarterbacks. I mean...
Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Not dying to go get him.
Right.
Potentially Kirk Cousins.
Potentially.
If he becomes available, which I know that Atlanta, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll keep him as a backup. I don't think Kirk is going to want to be a backup.
Yeah.
Sam Darnold as well.
And Sam Darnold,
but
of course.
If I'm Tennessee, I'm not going after any of those guys, unless if it's a one-year stopgap. Yeah. But I'd rather just see Levis another year, even though I don't think Levis is the answer.
I would rather see him, yeah. I agree with you. I think Will Levis, I still... Unless he turns the corner, to me it's the inside. It's inside the pocket presence. Not that he can't do it. I mean, we see him. He's doing mayo commercials, doing splits. I mean, I'm like, this guy can. If that's truly what, maybe it was fake. But who knows?
Was there an edict when you talked to the Jets and the conversations came up about Aaron Rodgers? This idea that Woody Johnson and Aaron don't see eye to eye, and I know Aaron Glenn supposedly wants Aaron back. Was Woody maybe at all pushing that Aaron would not be back on the team in the interview process?
No, without getting a ton of detail about that, no, not at all. I think he was really, I'm sure, and knowing his approach to this, he really wanted to hear the interview people talking about what they would truly do, and he didn't want to influence in any way, I'm sure, of what that response would be. So I would be really interested to sit in there. If I could be Rick Spielman and Mike Tannenbaum to say, listening to the different approaches, how many of those people said, no, keep him another year, right? We'll draft someone potentially and help them learn. I don't know if there were many of those. That's just my hypothetically.
When you gave your answer, though, when you were talking to them, did you kind of sense, they liked the answer, or was it, they definitely don't want this guy back? If you were maybe thinking about getting rid of him,
you know, it's a really interesting thought. I was trying to gauge that, and I couldn't really gauge it. But what I would say is, in my mind, if I were to be a president or someone over top of that, I would want that person to come in and be very stout about what they believe in. That would make it a lot easier than hem-hawing around about it, right? Like, kind of, sort of, kind of. I wouldn't want that, right? I want that guy that's coming in who's going to believe in it, and whether we agree or not that they're going to move forward on. I think that's a big thing when you're interviewing a general manager.
I know Sumer Sports is the best. What do you got cooking with that?
You know, we're just working hard. We just keep growing all the time. We started at three years ago, three of us, myself, Paul Tudor Jones, and his son. We have 40-plus data scientists and engineers now. We have five former general managers. We have about 25 NFL people in there. All of our subjective work that we're doing with all of our scouts is a very important part of the foundation of building our algorithms and all of our models. We fold in a lot of the data analytics and we create some really cool stuff. Our B2B business, NFL, but we're doing a lot of work in NCAA as well, right? And portal and NIL work, which, as we all know, that's a fascinating part of where sport is right now.
And who are you picking to win the game, by the way?
You know, my response is supposed to be that the AI brain, we call it, our Sumer brain, is suggesting that Philly has the nudge and the edge on the data side of it all and the statistical side. But because of the X factor that the quarterback, you know, and Patrick Mahomes is going to be a difference maker. But like I said, Howie's got a long memory and he hears it sometimes, so I'm not going to make a call on it. I think it's going to be a really close three-point game.
Thomas Dimitroff, appreciate it. Thanks so much, brother.
Always.
That's Thomas Dimitroff from Sumer Sports. This is Zach Gelb Show live here on Radio Row in New Orleans. Let's do this. We'll take a timeout right now. When we come on back, former NFL quarterback Ryan Leaf is going to stop by. We'll talk about some of those quarterback draft prospects and also the game coming up on Sunday, the Super Bowl between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs, with Patrick Mahomes going up against, obviously, Jalen Hurts. I feel like from the marketing standpoint, it's really Mahomes and Saquon are the two guys, and then who's the next person you're going to talk about the most? Even if he's not still as great as he once was, we still know how good of a football player he is and usually shows up for these postseason games. You obviously always have the Travis Kelce connection, not only with just the great player Travis Kelce is, but also who he's dating with Taylor Swift. So 15 minutes past the hour, Zach Gelb here with you live on Radio Row, day number one from the New Orleans Convention Center. Ryan Leaf joins us next. Alrighty, welcome back in inside the New Orleans Convention Center. The Zach Gelb Show on Super Bowl Radio Row is sponsored by Tide Pods. Turn to cold water washing with Tide Pods. When you switch from hot to cold, you could save up to $150 a year on your energy bill. Plus, Tide cleans great in cold. And I didn't know, when we were told we were being brought to you by Tide all throughout the week, that they would build a giant washing machine right behind us on Radio Row, which also serves with the Tide Pods, as you could kind of throw the pod right into the center of the washing machine. When I first saw it online, I thought it was an actual washing machine, and I thought, oh, I didn't have to pack that many clothes this week. I could just do laundry on Radio Row. But now joining us is a friend of the show and Ryan Leaf. Ryan, always great to see you. Appreciate the time. How you been?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. Yeah, that's great. That's a good display, man. That's you know, play with the Tide Pods, everybody. Don't eat them.
Yeah, yep. Which is crazy that you actually have to say that. But if you follow the news, obviously that's been in the news throughout the years. Let me ask you, just with the quarterback draft process, right? This time of the year, so many things are said. You never know if they're being said with good intentions or bad intentions. Sometimes there's a lot of things that get said with good intentions for the teams, but means bad intentions for the individual. Just when you talk to quarterbacks specifically about this draft process, I know for you it's more than football. What do you kind of just tell them these days?
Well, I just tell them they only can control three things, and that's their attitude, their behavior, and their effort, period. That's it. You know, you can't control what's going to be said, and there's going to be said a lot of things. And I always tell everybody, fans of these teams and stuff like that, anything that happens – I would argue anything that's said that happens after the Super Bowl until the NFL draft, you can't believe any of it.
Yeah, that's a thing too, because, for example, nothing against Jackson Dart, but I didn't see anyone saying Jackson Dart was going to be the second quarterback taken in this draft. And then the Senior Bowl week happens, and now it's, oh, he could be the second quarterback taken in the draft. I think Shador and Cam, right, are going to be the first two quarterbacks taken. So people always fly up the draft boards, and it's interesting, that process and how we get there.
You know, I don't think that realistically quarterbacks fly up the draft boards because of anything that's said in social media. I think it's, listen, they're graded by scouts, coaches, GMs, the people that matter. These draft grades are not are not made public unless they want to make them public.
Yeah.
Right. So whatever Mel Kiper says, it doesn't mean anything. You know, no matter what any of these guys say, if the draft grade in the war room is the one they're going off of. Like, let me give you an example. Peyton and I had two of the highest draft grades ever. We were both 9.5s out of 10s. And that just doesn't happen. Those are what make it. And there are not people that go, did you hear? Down at the Senior Bowl, Jackson Dart was this guy. And everybody's in the war room going, you know, unless you have an owner flat out that lives in that world. And they want to impose their will on their decision. It's just not the case. And so, and listen, this year's draft class is not what it was last year, okay? I don't necessarily think that there is a quarterback that has a first round grade in this year's class. Doesn't mean that there isn't one going to be drafted in the first round.
Sure.
You know?
So you don't think Shador or Cam are even first round quarterbacks in your opinion?
They don't have a first round grade in my opinion. I don't think I've seen from any general manager that I've spoken to or any sources I spoke to that have given them a first round grade. And first round grades are usually 8.8 to 10. And I want to say maybe even now they're somewhere around 9.2 to 10. I mean, it's significant. I mean, there'll be an instance where you have 32 teams picking and you'll have, you know, overall there may be like 15 guys that have first-round draft grades. But there's still going to be 32 picks, you know. So then you go and decide whether do we just take the best possible player available or do we move back knowing that, you know, we'll be reaching with the pick that we go with. And so you have examples of this, you know, the Kenny Pickett one, certainly, yeah, where he was drafted in the first round. He was
19th, yeah.
Yeah, he easily could have been a second round pick to the Steelers even, you know. And so I always thought that was a reach. You know, there's instances where you go, and I thought what happened with Will Levis 2 years ago was the best thing that could ever happen to him because, you know, no one reached for him. You know, he was a second round guy. He had a second round grade, and he went in the second round like he was supposed to. And so there was no pressure, right? He could go out and in his first game out, throws four touchdowns, you know, and now he's going to have to work for it because he got made the starting quarterback and he had a down year and they got the number one overall pick and there's a chance they take a quarterback. And, you know, we'll see how it goes, but he's going to put the work in and see where we go from here.
And as we talk about, you could not have, in your opinion, right, a first round grade or what the general manager says is a first round grade and a quarterback. And we still very may well have two quarterbacks going in the first three picks of the draft. I could see Tennessee or Cleveland, one of them passing. I don't think both will pass. And the Giants, they almost have to take a quarterback at this stage. So with all that being said, at their best, Cam Ward, Shador Sanders, if they're not a first-round great quarterback, then what do you think they can become?
Well, when you have that pick, and maybe there's a team that needs a defensive player or something, and you can move back. The fear of that is that you move back and somebody takes one of the quarterbacks. You know, the biggest thing for general managers in this league is they live in a constant state of FOMO. It's just this fear of missing out on the next great thing. You know, what somebody else has. I'm telling you right now. You know, when Andy Reid knew exactly what he wanted in Patrick Mahomes and they made the trade to move up, when the pick was made, no one looked around and went, you know, what a great job. What an impressive thing. They were like, what are you talking about? This, you know, I didn't even know if he'd be a first-round draft pick in the eyes of a lot of people. You know, Lee Steinberg had signed him, and it was just kind of out of left field. You know, we played in the air raid offense. And
he was here. It was in Houston, I think it was.
Houston Super Bowl, yeah.
And he was walking around Radio Row. And you know how it is here, right? It's not tough to get.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built. It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Someone on a show, if they're a great player.
Yep.
They were begging to put Patrick Mahomes on shows. And now, if they ever brought him here, it would be three shows and then out.
It's the way it works, you know. He's made the most of everything. He just really has. You know, the things worked the way they were supposed to. He went to the team that he was supposed to with the head coach, and who were tied to one another, you know. And Andy saw it. They saw it. They understood it. They knew how to nurture it and cultivate it into being one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. So it's been incredibly impressive.
And it's fascinating on both sides as Ryan Leaf is here with us. So you have Mahomes, right, the Chiefs being aggressive to go get him because they thought they had their guy. Then he sat for a year, first year then playing, 50 touchdowns. They lose to the Patriots and Brady in the AFC Championship game. But Jalen Hurts, too. I remember was doing the second-round draft coverage for our network. They draft Jalen Hurts, and I go, okay, that's an insurance policy with the injuries that Carson Wentz suffered. But landing in a place like Philadelphia, and they've built the roster since, but you have one of the best GMs in Howie Roseman for a guy that Jalen Hurts, no one thought he was going to be a first-round pick to what he ended up walking into. It was a little chaotic in the beginning because of the other quarterback there, but man, wow. You want to talk about surrounding quarterbacks with something when he's ready to go. That's what the Eagles had now done.
Yeah, they definitely. I remember that well. I was it was the day before the world shut down. I was in Norman at covering it for ESPN, the pro day for Oklahoma, and it was Jalen Hurts and CeeDee Lamb, and you know, Baltimore was really interested in him, you know, it kind of has that insurance policy and stuff like that. But the thing about Jalen Hurts is that whoever drafted them, he's going to be your starting quarterback at some point because he'll just outwork everybody. And that's exactly what happened. You know, it was bound to happen in Philadelphia. And so I'm really excited for him. 2 Super Bowls in 3 years. He gets a chance at some revenge with some better assets around him. You know, and he played maybe is one of his best football games of his life. And then in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, just wasn't good enough. You know, and he may just be playing in an era where, for everybody else, it's just not good enough because it's Patrick Mahomes.
When we get back to the draft conversation, when a guy is tagged as a generational talent, and it's not just 1 year, right? For Joe Burrow, he came pretty much out of nowhere, even though what his ranking was when he first got to Ohio State. But then no one was talking about him after his first year at LSU, and then boom, flies up the draft boards, and it's one of the great stories in one season. But guys like an Andrew Luck, a Trevor Lawrence, that in college it's identified they're the guy. For Andrew, unfortunately, injuries, right, derailed his career. But for a guy like Trevor Lawrence, do you think just being called that guy so early is what is going to end up doing him in the NFL?
No, I don't think so. I think that, you know, I thought the Doug Peterson offense would have been much more helpful. And I thought it was for a while. Listen, you know, they had that great run. They got to the playoffs and they won the game and got to the division round and played the Chiefs really well at Arrowhead. And then, you know, frankly, Trevor got hurt, you know, and he tried to play through it. And then, of course, his rookie year, he gets stuck with Urban Meyer, which, you know, was just like you could just tear that rookie year up and say you're starting over again. So, you know, I think Liam Cohen does a really good job of scheming things and simplifying the offense. Where I think Trevor just he has to get better at is at the line of scrimmage and identifying, you know, protections. I think that's the biggest one because I think he can go a long way of making things much easier for himself as if he protects himself with a slide or whatnot so he can have more time to throw the football.
If we were redoing the draft from last year, Ryan Leaf now, and we know what the order was. It was Caleb Williams ended up going 1. Then you saw Jaden Daniels go 2. And then 3 ended up being Drake May. if they could redraft those first three picks with the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots, how do you think those quarterbacks would end up going?
Well, I mean, I think you would probably have to say it has to be Jaden Daniels at one overall. And then I would argue Bo Nix, you know, maybe at two. And then you'd probably say it's Michael Penix Jr. My guys.
So not Caleb or Drake?
Not in the top three.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, not from what we saw. This was, I always have, this was May 21st, 2024. These were my quarterback rankings.
Wow.
Heading into, so this was before, or this was just after the draft. I still think, and I, you know, Daniels has proved me wrong in this, just because I don't think you have any data from Penix. They played head-to-head, too. It was a pretty good matchup. That's going to be a fun one in the NFC. I think those guys battling each other. But my number one guy was Penix. My number two guy was Daniels, Nix, Williams, McCarthy, and May. Those were the six guys in that order. And so it's kind of played out a little bit that way. Bo Nix was really special this year.
So top to bottom is my biggest takeaway here. Why were you so in love with Michael Penix? And then also, why were you so down on Drake May?
So Penix for me was a guy that didn't take sacks and was incredibly accurate down the football field. Those are just two things you can't, like, if you put that at the NFL level your rookie year, where you are getting rid of the football immediately and not taking sacks, and you are accurate down the field when you have an opportunity for deep passes, that makes you the perfect quarterback in this day and age of the NFL. And so May, on the other hand, for me was his youth. The fact that he was going to such a bad football team, I did not necessarily know if his skill set fit with what the NFL was going to ask you to do, especially in New England, and so I was definitely wrong with that. He took risks, he became the leader, and he became the defunct, franchise quarterback for the Patriots. So, like, if I was reworking this right now, I'd probably go, Daniels, Nix, Penix, May, Williams, McCarthy is the way I'd probably do the six. And I place Williams behind May simply because he didn't learn this year. He just kept doing the same thing over and over and over and over again, trying to vacate the pocket out the backside and taking sack after sack after sack. And it was just – and he didn't take the risks. You know, he just did not take risks. He didn't throw any interceptions, and that was a big reason. Like, in first halves of football games for the Bears, they looked like they didn't know what – or how to play offensive football in those first halves. And then in the second halves, they had to come back from behind, and Caleb can run around and throw the ball around and make some plays, but that's not what's going to win you football games.
For this year, would you go Shador or would you go Cam? Or is there another guy?
Riley Leonard for me is,
wow,
he is a special, special player. And I think he was really limited this year because of what Notre Dame did offensively. So much so that, they had to run him as much as they did. But when they finally let him heave it there in the second half to come back in that football game, he was pretty special. And this last week in Mobile, he was in a pro-style offense, and he made every throw that was asked. And he is a leader, and people followed him. And so, like, I think, he's probably going to sit around a second or third day, probably a third day grade. And in any team that gets him in that spot, try to keep him off the field if you're an NFL team. If he doesn't go to a place that has an incumbent franchise quarterback, like a place where, he could be next in line, there's just nothing that's going to keep him off the football field.
Would you lead in Shador or Cam, though?
Probably Shador, simply because just of everything that he has, the knowledge that he has. Fundamentally, he's incredible. Like, his arm angle and release is so impressive. He's got the tutelage of his father, who played in this league for years, is one of the greatest of all time. He's been coached by professionals his entire life. And Cam has kind of been a meteoric rise. Started in Incarnate Word, went to Washington State.
Zero star.
It hasn't necessarily been able to win. I think that's one of the things for me is that, for all the hoopla and everything like that, he still wasn't able to win at Washington State. The guy that came in behind him in John Mateer this year almost gets him to the college football playoff. So that's one of the bigger things for me is he a winner? And so that for that reason, I put him in the second spot. Though, talking with Jason Taylor, which, anytime you talk to your, coaches from the teams you're with, Jason Taylor, who's a Hall of Fame defensive end, flat out said he's a killer. And so when you hear that from somebody with that kind of...
They say, wait a second.
With those kind of credentials, that perks your ears up, definitely.
Tell everyone about the Last Mile.
Yeah, so the Last Mile Foundation that was started about 15 years ago that started placing education in prisons. And not just any sort of educations programs, but coding. Teaching inmates how to code. Audio-visual production. Two things that when you get out that are, actually things you can, attributable skills to making a living. And that's what you want. 95% of the people incarcerated at this moment are going to get out. And do you want them to get out and, victimize the community again and go back? Or do you want them to be able to contribute and give back to the community and be a part of society and feel hope around that? And that's what the program does. And so they established the radio show about a year ago and have made me the host about 6 months ago. And I get to tell the stories of a lot of these individuals. And some of the other ones have just been incredible. We spent a full day in San Quentin prison about 2 weeks ago talking to those men. And the hope that comes from, knowing that when you get out, there's a chance. You know, the recidivism rate in our country is just overwhelming. We are the highest populated prison population in the entire world. And that has to change. Over hundreds of years, it hasn't worked. We haven't, eliminated crime and everything by, locking them up more and more and more. You know, there has to be programming. There has to be things that give them hope. You're not the worst thing that you've ever done. And stigma has to go with that. So that's what the Last Mile is. Incredibly, blessed and grateful for that responsibility. And, some of the shows we've had of late, I had Larry Miller on just recently. He's the president and chair for the Jordan brand. 16 years old, growing up in Philly. He's in a gang. He shoots and kills somebody. Spends years in prison. Back before the internet, back before background checks or anything like that, he goes on to work for a corporation. All of a sudden is hired as the president for the Portland Trailblazers. And with Paul Allen, who didn't go to owners meetings, Larry would go and was the incumbent owner of the Portland Trailblazers, goes on to work as the head of Jordan brand. And then years later, he starts to hear that the story might come out. And his daughter said, "You have to go call Phil and Michael." And I asked the question, "Phil and Michael who?" He was like, "Phil Knight and Michael Jordan." And they have to go. He has to call them and tell them this story.
Wow.
And in doing so, they both said, "We love you, man. We know who you are.
We're going to support you.
Do what your daughter says. Write the book." And then he goes and writes the book. And he tells the story. And I think he did an incredible thing, because if he would have went to his grave, not had telling told that, there were men that looked just like him, a young black man out there that would have said, "See, I can't be transparent. I can't tell anybody about these things," because he didn't. And that's how he got. But instead, he is able to. And people go, "Hey, he's the head of the highest, biggest, I think, probably sporting brand out there in Jordan brand, and and has this story, and he's helping people." And I think it's amazing. And so I got to interview him, so it's a purposeful show that's much different than what I've done over the last 8 years when it's been really around sports broadcasting. Another one we had recently was the founder and COO of Death Row Records. He spent 34 years in prison. Donald Trump, before he left office the first time, commuted his sentence, and he's been out for 4 years. And the changes he's making around his community and in a community that he victimized when he was running the streets back then. So it's incredibly powerful. It's an unbelievable program, and one that I'm really lucky to be a part of.
He's Ryan Leaf. Ryan, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Zach. Good to see you.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, Zach Gelb here with you back inside Radio Row. Let's listen up to the Mavs general manager, Nico Harrison. I'm going to try to not yell and freak out in this segment, but I watched the 10 or 15 minutes of just jackassery yesterday from Nico Harrison, and my blood was boiling just listening to him just continue to have verbal diarrhea. But this is Nico Harrison. If they talk to other teams besides the Lakers before trading one of the top three or five players in the NBA in Luka Doncic.
No, and I'd like to give Rob Pelinka a lot of credit. You know, trades, you guys have been around here. Trades don't happen at the smallest level without stuff getting out. And Rob and I were able to have, you know, really intense conversations over the course of, you know, 3 or 4 weeks that started out as a coffee that, you know, was more, hey, would you ever, I don't know, would I? Let me think of, you know, and then it built upon that. And, you know, we kept it between us. We had to keep it tight. J. Kidd didn't know about it. But J. Kidd and I are aligned, and we talk about archetypes, and we talk about the culture that we want to create. So I know the type of players that he likes without actually talking to him. Hey, would you like, you know, so I know that. And J. Kidd coached them when they won a championship.
The biggest bull crap on that is J. Kidd and I, we're aligned. How are you know that you're aligned with your head coach if before trading your best player in the identity of your franchise, you don't even talk to him? So what, did Jason Kidd, did he can't stand Luka Doncic? Because if that's the case, then Jason Kidd shouldn't be coaching the team and Nico Harrison shouldn't be the general manager. Here is Nico Harrison. He says he made the call on this trade and he's the one responsible for it.
Let's be clear, I'm the one making the decision and Jay's supportive of it. So it's me. I don't do anything that's scary. I think everything that we do, we put a lot of work into it. We study it and we restudy it and we go back, and I understand the magnitude of it. So the easiest thing for me to do is do nothing, and everyone would praise me for doing nothing. But we really believe in it, and time will tell if I'm right.
I'll tell you right now, you're not going to be right. Yeah, you don't recover. You may be able to have a moment, but getting Anthony Davis, who's older and only a first-round pick, for Luka Doncic, when the reason why you didn't talk to other teams is because this would have got out and then your fans would have revolted and they would have prevented the trade. If you were talking around and this would have leaked and then fans would have freaked out and then you would have said, okay, now we can't, because of what the reaction is after this is just talked about. It's one thing when you make the trade and then you have an overreaction to it after the fact, but there would have been days where this could have been prevented. But that's just, it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable to trade him, and then it's really unacceptable to not talk to other teams to get the most back for him. Nico Harrison, did Luka Doncic just no longer fit the Mavs culture, whatever that is now?
No, listen, one thing about me, I'm not going to talk bad about any players. Like, that's not going to do, you know, us or me any good. I just say there's levels to it. And there's people that fit the culture, and there's people that come in and add to the culture. And those are two distinct things. And I believe the people that were coming in are adding to the culture.
So whatever culture Nico Harrison has built or has in Dallas, Luka Doncic just didn't meet it. And is that more of a Luka problem, or is that a Mavericks problem? Is that Luka, or is it the GM? Now, I'm not saying that Luka was in the best shape. I'm not saying that Luka couldn't be better. But if you're starting with Luka, and he's already a top five player in the league, and he just had the team in the NBA Finals, maybe you should have found a way to make that work. Now, just a thought. Here is Nico Harrison on when he first told Patrick Dumont, the new owner of the Dallas Mavericks, you know, Mark Cuban only owns 27% of the team. Because if Mark Cuban was still the majority owner, I can guarantee you this would have never happened. Because Mark Cuban once said he would rather divorce his wife first than ever trading away Luka Doncic. So here is Nico Harrison when he first told the new owner or governor, whatever they call in the NBA these days, and Patrick Dumont of the Mavericks.
The first time he laughed at me. No, I mean, Patrick, he's the owner, obviously. He's the ultimate decision maker, but he entrusts in J. Kidd and I to lead this team, and he's putting the trust into us. And then, obviously, you got to get judged on the performance that you've done as a leader. And at some point, if it doesn't work out, then I'll be judged for that.
Now, there's a lot of times where we go, we don't want a meddling owner. But I also want checks and balances. And if Nico Harrison is going to operate as a lone wolf here, and he's going to basically come up with trading Luka Doncic for pretty much only Anthony Davis and a first-round pick, that's the main part. That's the mashed potatoes and the gravy of the dish here. Someone in that organization says you can't do this. And if it means that you lose Nico Harrison as your general manager, so be it. Because I'd much rather have, hot take of the day, I would much rather have Luka Doncic as my star player than Nico Harrison as my general manager. And here is Nico Harrison, how he ended his press conference, making a joke about his future, because when everyone's annoyed, all we want is a crappy stand-up comedian, right?
Well, I think the long term is the time frame. I think he fits our time frame. If you pair him with Kyrie and the rest of the guys, he fits right along with our time frame to win now and win in the future. And the future to me is 3-4 years from now. The future, 10 years from now, I don't know. I don't think they probably bury me and Jay Budden. Or we bear ourselves.
Yes.
Smug, arrogant, and thinking you're the smartest guy in the room. That's the three ways I would describe Nico Harrison. Smug, arrogant, and thinking you're the smartest guy in the room. And what did that lead to? Led to him no longer having Luka Doncic. Ugh, man. That trade, I'm still stunned by it. You know, it prevented me from a lot of sleep on Sunday. And I had to get up early and get to the airport to get her to New Orleans. Because I was just in shock. I let it process really all of Sunday. Still didn't believe it. And even today, yeah, sure, you had the Myles Garrett trade request. So that kind of takes some of the thinking and the mind to other places. But still, I then try to go back to the Mavericks and this deal. And I go, Stu's team got Luka Doncic. I was happy for Stu. Happy, right, for the Lakers. But the Mavericks, you walk past the Dirk statue. It looked like a memorial, and Dirk had no part of this. They had, like, flowers. Oh, Luka, we'll miss you. Fire Nico Harrison. It's the most shocking sports trade in my 30 years of living that I could ever remember. All righty, we'll take a break. A Radio Row tradition. Solomon Wilcox will join us next.